ओमस्य उपधाया कच्छ श्रीमती भक्ति वरंत संगीत नाम है नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी ओम गणतिनिंदस्य सनम सनम सुलक्षा तक्षुसुमलतरमलयतस्वान गुरुवे नमः Sri Chaitanya Vishtam Sapitam Sayam Padamayam Nadati Anyone remember anything from yesterday? Class yesterday. So long ago, and all the rain. But I'll read the description of the verses. It had to do with bees. That was part of it. Krishna moves about the forest in the company of his friends, who vividly chant the glories of his magnificent deeds. He thus appeared just like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the cows wander onto the mountainsides and Krishna calls out to them with the sound of his flute, the trees and creepers in the forest respond by becoming so luxuriant with fruits and flowers that they seem to be manifesting Lord Vishnu within their hearts. So they naturally expanded, their consciousness became uplifted to the platform of love. This was the trees and the creepers. And as a result of that, they became luxuriant with fruits and flowers. So when the heart becomes filled in Krishna consciousness, then the natural fruit that we as individuals have as our very nature is able to be offered to Krishna. As their branches bend lower the weight, the filaments on their trunks and vines stand erect out of ecstasy of love of God, and both the trees and the creepers pour down a rain of sweet sap. So very beautiful scene is described. Maddened by the divine honey-like aroma of the tulsi flowers on the garland Krishna wears, swarms of bees sing loudly for him, and that most beautiful of all persons. So how amazing that is. The most beautiful of all persons. And if one becomes captivated by the beauty of Krishna, then one is completely captivated. And then one's heart blossoms in love, and one makes one's offerings to him. And so the bees began to sing loudly for him, they're buzzing. And that most beautiful of all persons thankfully acknowledges and acclaims their song by taking his flute to his lips and playing it. So he reciprocates by playing his own musical accompaniment. The charming flute song then steals away the minds of the cranes, the swans, and other lake-dwelling birds. Indeed, they approach Krishna, they close their eyes, and maintaining strict silence, worship him by fixing their consciousness upon him in deep meditation. So they remain in the branches of the trees or on the lakes with their eyes closed, just like munis, and their mind is completely absorbed in the sound vibration of Krishna's flute, which is all attractive as Krishna is all attractive. Now the next verse. Goddesses of Vraja. So the gopis are talking, speaking to each other. When Krishna is enjoying himself with Balaram on the mountain slopes, playfully wearing a flower garland on the top of his head, he gladdens all with resonant vibrations of his flute. Thus he delights the entire world. So what scene is that? What do you remember from that scene? That Krishna, where is Krishna? Okay, let me read it again. When Krishna is enjoying himself with Balaram on the mountain slopes, playfully wearing a flower garland on the top of his head. So he's wandering around Govardhan Hill or some of the other hills, and he has a flower garland on the top of his head. And what else is he doing? He engladdens all with the resonant vibrations of his flute. So this is also a wonderful scene. Thus he delights the entire world. At that time, the nearby cloud, afraid of offending a great personality, thunders very gently in accompaniment. The cloud showers flowers onto his dear friend Krishna and shades him from the sun like an umbrella. So there's also some of this is also recounted in the Bhagavad-gita, the 21st chapter of the 10th canto. Tisva pate braja pasun. The cloud thinks himself a friend of Krishna because of two reasons. That when someone is in distress, Krishna can give him full shelter. So similarly, the cloud, when someone is really hot due to the summer heat, can give him shelter by acting like an umbrella to block the sun. And the second reason is that the color of the cloud is what color? Huh?
Sham.
That's also a name of, so therefore the clouds, Krishna's name is Megha Sham, because he's the Sham, like the Megh, like the cloud. So because they both had their complexion in common, and because they both shield and give protection for those who are distressed, the cloud felt himself Dushvapate Brajapasun Sa Rama Gopai Sancharayantam. As Krishna was wandering in the forest, Krishna Prema Pravritta, out of love, the clouds would go over Krishna just to protect him, as an umbrella protects someone from the sun. So whether the clouds were actually thinking like this, or this was just a manifestation of the gopis Mahabhava, their position is the highest devotees, because the symptom of someone who is in the highest position, the highest consciousness, he sees his own mood reflected in everyone else. So because that person loves Krishna, he sees everyone else is loving Krishna, and everything else loving Krishna. And the only person he doesn't think loves Krishna is himself. So it's such a unique consciousness, Mahabhava, and love for Krishna. So he gladdens all with the resonant vibration of his flute, he delights the entire world. At that time, the nearby cloud, afraid of offending a great personality, thunders very gently in accompaniment, and the cloud showers flowers onto his dear friend Krishna and shades him from the sun like an umbrella. So there's no comment here in the BBT book. But let's see, Vishwanath has written something. Having described the joy the conscious and unconscious entities on the earth felt from hearing Krishna's flute, the gopis now describe the bliss of the unconscious entities in the sky. So these entities are unconscious, and yet the way that they're describing them, like a cloud, is unconscious, but the way that the gopis are describing them is if not only are they conscious, but they love Krishna. Sahabala means accompanied by Balaram and the cowherd boys. Krishna looked gorgeous as he playfully draped garlands on the top of his head, on his chest, and his ornaments over his ears. Have you ever seen anyone put flower garlands around their ears? In Vrindavan, you see that? I don't know. Yeah, well, she's brought Vrindavan culture here to birth.
That's the deity's
gone.
You know,
Prasadam. So Krishna had garlands on his chest, on his head, ornaments over his ears, and he stood on the slope of a mountain and joyfully vibrated his flute to inundate the entire universe with bliss. So what does inundate mean? Inundate. Flood. So the universe becomes over flooded with bliss when Krishna plays his flute, because the sound is so attractive. And the clouds in the sky began to rumble gently so that their sound would not disrupt the great cloud of Krishna. The thundering of the clouds blended favorably with the flute sound, not disturbing it in any way. The cloud was a dear friend, Suridam, of Krishna, because both are of a dark color and both act to remove people's distress. The cloud then sprinkled fine particles of ice, which were just like tiny flowers. Ice? How could that be like tiny flowers?
Sculpture.
Huh?
Sculpture.
Maybe. But we also know that tiny particles of ice are called snowflakes. And snowflakes have incredible designs, like flowers. And how, in the middle of the summer when it's so hot, how much we'd appreciate a little little snowflake falling around. So this was how the cloud was reciprocating. Because everyone is reciprocating with Krishna. The cloud then sprinkled fine particles of ice, which were just like tiny flowers, and made an umbrella from its own shadow to relieve his friend from the scorching heat of the sun. Pratapatram means that which delivers one from the intense heat. Pratapa. Here we understand that Krishna is the cloud standing on the slope of the mountain. His garlands and earrings are like the cranes flying in the sky. His yellow dhoti is like lightning. And the song of his flute is the rain showering the essence of delicious nectar. So Krishna is just like a cloud in this way also. Who can remember that? All the different things in the metaphor.
His garland and ornaments are like cranes flying in the sky.
Yeah, his garland and earrings are the cranes flying in the sky, because cranes are usually white color. His yellow dhoti is, and the song of his flute is the rain showering the essence of delicious nectar. So this is Krishna Sham, standing on the slope of the mountains. So a very picturesque description. Continuing 14 to 15. And it's not just, and the gopis are saying these things, they feel just longing to be with Krishna. This is so exceptional. They just long to be with Krishna. They miss him. They're thinking that a moment's separation from him is yugayitam nameshena. The blinking of the eye is like thousands and thousands of years for them, because in the blinking of their eye they can't see Krishna for that moment. And for them that's intolerable. So how extreme is their love for Krishna? It's actually incomprehensible to a conditioned soul who is basically hard-hearted and doesn't have love for the Supreme Lord. Now the next verse. O pious Mother Yasoda. Now Mother Yasoda has entered amongst the young gopis while they're talking. Now that's going to probably affect the way that they speak about her darling son, because the relationship of mother and conjugal relationship and the paternal relationship don't mix very well. So, O pious Mother Yasoda, your son, who is expert in all the arts of herding cows, has invented many new styles of flute playing. When he takes his flute to his bimbo red lips, I have a photo of a bimbo flute, but I don't have it with me. It's on my computer. And it's quite red. So Krishna takes his, so first thing they tell him, your son plays the flute in such a wonderful way that no one has ever heard before, because he's invented so many styles, new styles of flute playing. And when he takes his flute to his bimba red lips and sends forth the tones of the harmonic scale in variegated melodies, Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and other chief demigods become confused hearing the sound. Although they are the most learned authorities, they cannot ascertain the essence of that music, and thus they bow down their heads and their hearts. Here is the purport. The words Tava Sutta Sati, your son, O chaste lady, clearly indicates that at this point Mother Yasoda is among the young gopis as they earnestly describe Sri Krishna's glories. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, among the demigods led by Sakra, Lord Indra, were Rupendra, Agni, Yamaraj, and amongst those led by Sarva, Lord Shiva, were Katyayani, Skanda, and Ganesh, and amongst those led by Parameshki, Lord Brahma, there were the four Kumaras and Narada. Thus the best collective intelligence in the universe could not definitely analyze the enchanting musical arrangements of the Supreme Lord. So when there's a musical performance or a dramatic performance or someone has written a new book or there's a movie, there's always critics, but not critic in the sense of criticizers, but people who are considered expert, who analyze the merits and demerits of a particular piece of artwork. So for one to be able to analyze that, one has to have so much experience, and one has to be able to place it in the context of something greater in one sense. One has to know what the perfection of that art is. Otherwise, what can they compare it to? So when it comes to the way that Krishna plays this flute, the demigods, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and their associates, they're considered the most learned and expert in all things, but also in musical playing. And we can see this, that when there's a person who isn't very learned in music, he can't tell the difference really between good music and bad music. Mm. like when there's a symphony playing, you know, he can't tell whether the instruments are expert or mediocre or poor, or the conductor is great or mediocre or poor, or the symphony itself is great or mediocre or poor. But because he himself doesn't have great learning and sensitivity in that, he's not developed in that field. But someone who's expert, he can place it again in a frame of reference with its merits and demerits against practically more or less perfection. So the greatest of the demigods were considered the greatest of musicians and analyzers and critics. And again, not criticism in the sense of we shouldn't criticize people, but it's more or less an objective analysis of the merits and demerits of a certain piece of art. But not only couldn't these greatest of authorities analyze, they couldn't even understand it. It was so unique and beautiful, Krishna's music. Like I remember you telling me about like Indra's, the way Indra does kirtan, the way he manipulated the especially the rhythms, I think, yeah. That he would change from one subtle rhythm, because we only know this, you know, we know. And then, or if we're a little more advanced, we also know. Dutal. But he would do things that you would hear, and I couldn't hear them at all. I couldn't understand anything, you know, except that whether I liked something, a little bit of this or a little bit of that. But from the subtle musical point of view, it takes an expert to be able to recognize another expert, someone who's very learned in that. But these most experts, they couldn't fathom the greatness of Krishna's flute playing. So that's what the gopis are saying to Mother Yasoda. He has invented so many new styles of flute playing. So what does Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur say about this? Late in the afternoon, some gopis present logical reasons why their beloved, who was supposed to be returning to Braj at this time, had remained absent from their sight for so long. On some pretext, they went to Mother Yasoda's house and mixed with the elders, the young girls, and the children. But actually what they were interested in was to talk about Krishna's qualities, transcendental qualities, and power, and his activities. Mother Yasoda listened intently and also related numerous pastimes of her darling son. In order to pacify Yasoda, who was becoming overwhelmed with separation from Krishna, and also to appease their own minds, the gopis told her about the power of Krishna's flute playing in this verse. So then the same information is given that's in the book. But incapable, Skanda, Ganesh, and those led by Lord Brahma, such as the four Kumaras and Narada, as well as the best composers of songs, hear that song and taste its sweetness, and they bow down their necks and minds. They're overwhelmed and humbled by Krishna's expertise in flute playing. They are incapable of comprehending the raga and the tala, the beats and the melodies that Krishna is playing. They become completely bewildered by the flute song and lose their ability to understand the real identity of the musical scales. If such illustrious demigods become bewildered, then what can we say of ordinary mortals? In this way, your son, with his flute playing, bewilders the entire universe. So everyone in Braja was in this state of mind. They thought of nothing but Krishna, and when Krishna was present before them, it was one kind of ecstasy, and was Krishna, when Krishna was absent from their eyesight, it was another type of ecstasy. And to remove the separation, the feeling of separation from Krishna, which was intolerable, what did they do? They talked about Krishna, because Krishna Katha, or talks about Krishna, and his pastimes, his activities, his form. They are Krishna. So the concept of a sound vibration being the same as the object is peculiar and it's not according to the way we think, but actually. In the Vedic system, but not only the Vedic system, that the great philosopher Plato spoke about this, in the Bible they talk about this, that it's on the absolute platform, that there's a higher platform where the object and the words that describe the object are the same. And the example that we always give in the material world, we can say water, 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 etc. And pani, 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 dal, 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 aqua, aqua, aqua. Any others? How do you say it?
Mime, mime, mime.
Huh?
Mime.
Mime? Good. Nice. But regardless of how you pronounce it in the different languages, you're still thirsty. But in the spiritual world, in the spiritual realm, the object water and the sound water, they're exactly the same. And I was listening to Radhananda Maharaj speak about in the Bible, when they talk about the temple in Jerusalem, the building of the temple, and it was to be for the name of God. For the glorification of the name of God, and it was going to, it was for the name. So everyone considered that the name, and they won't even say the name. They even, when I get a letter from my sister, she writes G-D, as if the Supreme Lord, if someone imperfect says the name, it's going to contaminate the Lord or something like that. They have some concept like that, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
That it's too great to be spoken. So that's it's a respect, which is nice in that sense, to be respectful. But it's not philosophical, and it's not actually what was going on originally. So in any case, the name of Krishna and Krishna are just the same. And the pastimes of Krishna and Krishna are just the same. And this is especially true when a person who loves Krishna chants Krishna's name, because then Krishna manifests his full potency within the name. That's called Sudanam, or the pure name of Krishna. So when a person who loves Krishna calls out to Krishna, that gives Krishna so much pleasure. Why? And that he's fully present there. But why does it give him pleasure? Because it's completely natural. It's completely natural when someone calls you with love to feel happiness in your heart. And if someone calls you with great hatred or neutrality, you don't experience anything. You don't want to come. But as soon as someone calls you with love, it's natural. Everyone wishes to come. So Krishna also fully manifests his potency in his name when he's called with love. So therefore, Anande Bolo Hari, with great ecstatic love, chant the name of Krishna. Bhajra Vrindavan, Narottama Das Thakur says, Anande Bolo Hari. And this is one of the gifts of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that if we chant Krishna's holy names because of imperfections in our mentality, we don't feel that love, and therefore our chanting is hollow and our mind is distracted, and Krishna doesn't fully manifest himself. But if we chant the names of Nittai and Gaur and the Pancha Tattva, then there are no offenses. And then I heard Prabhupada say this in a lecture, an early lecture. He said, even now if you do this, you chant the names of Nittai and Gaur and then chant the Hare Krishna mantra, you will feel ecstatic. Even now, he said. Because the names of Nittai and Gaur, they bring us to the platform of offenseless chanting, because you cannot commit offenses when chanting those names, because they don't accept the offenses. They're full of odarya, or magnanimity and mercy. So, and then chanting the holy names of Krishna brings great, great effect.
What do you mean, can't do offenses on each other?
When we chant the names of Krishna, there are 10 offenses, 10 or 11, depending how we count them. And because we commit offenses, the chanting is on a lower level, and we don't get the effects. So there's that verse in the second canto of the Bhagavatam that says, I know that the heart must be, I think it's Azmasar, the essence, my heart must be the essence of rock. In other words, a rock is known for its what? Its hardness. So Prabhupada translated that as steel framed, like a piece of steel. Like even though I'm chanting Krishna's names, my heart doesn't melt, tears don't come from my eyes. So in the purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada explains, and the verse itself explains, that this is due to offenses. And Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sundarbha says this is the reason why we don't get the result. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur describes in his comments on Sikshastakam, Dudayavimiddhi Samihan, Anujayana Raga, unfortunate as I am, I have no attraction for the holy names. I have no attraction for Krishna. So there are different reasons why we don't have attraction for Krishna. So he lists them in detail. Bhaktivinoda Thakur does. And one of them is aparad, or offenses against the name. Others are, we have material attachments, we have weaknesses of heart, and we don't know the philosophy properly. And we have a thirst, a sat Krishna. We have a thirst, we thirst for the temporary. We desire the things of this world, even up to the point of heavenly delights and mystic opulences, subtle things, gross things, whatever. We thirst, a sat Krishna. Krishna means thirst for the temporary. So this inhibits our proper chanting, so we don't chant with love because of having offended the holy names, and therefore we don't get the proper result, and our hearts remain steel framed. But when we chant the names of Nittai Gauranga, the Pancha Tattva mantra, there are no offenses taken into consideration when it comes to those names, the names of Nittai and Gaur, because they don't accept them. They don't accept offenses. Because why? Because Mahaprabhu is magnanimous. Because his heart is so melted in his love for Krishna that he doesn't note anything, anyone's faults. He just wants to give. Nityananda and Mahaprabhu are like that. So, the point being, and this is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, actually, from the Adi Lila, that if you chant the names of Nityananda and Gaur, that can raise you, despite offenses that may be sitting in the heart, to the platform of great happiness, ecstasy, ananda. And then, when one chants the holy names of Krishna, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, then one will get the result and feel happiness. Yeah. Is that understandable?
It's like we need to chant 16 rounds before they go into the mantra, and then 16 rounds where the name is Krishna.
But it's not like one to one, it's a matter of just doing it, just chanting so that the heart moves, because everything tends to stay in the mind. But bhakti includes things for the body. Karma yoga is based on the body working and offering the fruits to Krishna, or part of the fruits to Krishna. Jnana yoga is based on what? Mind and intelligence. And living on that platform. But it doesn't really have anything to do with the body. And also karma yoga, just offering the fruits, doesn't have anything to do with the intelligence on one level, and maybe a little. And it doesn't have anything to do with your emotions. And jnana yoga, jnanis, they keep away from emotions. There was the Greek philosophers, the Stoics, after Aristotle's time, I think it was, or during and after, who they were thinking that emotions were the worst things because they get in the way of the intellect. But actually the fact is that the emotions are the most powerful thing. So bhakti is very much emotion, but not material emotion, but the soul's longing and love for Krishna. But bhakti includes the body, activities of the body, and the realm of the intelligence and mind as well, but is especially bhakti means devotion, which is a spiritual, but an emotion. So we want to place some bhakti into our chanting. That is ideal. Is that clear? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is here. So when we see the deities, we see the deities, or we're chanting, or we're doing a service, we want to make it an offering. Everything an offering filled with devotion, a gift, because that's what gives it its taste for Krishna. Because what other than devotion of one insignificant soul, what else do we have to offer? What can the insignificant offer the all-powerful, all-greatest, except himself in this form? And when one has that, patram pushpam param tvayam yamam bhakti prayasati taraham bhakti paritam asnani, Krishna says, if one takes something, even if it's a leaf, a fruit or flower, or some water, and just offers that to the all-powerful, all wealthy Supreme Lord with some devotion, and Asnami, I will accept it, Krishna says. So devotion is It's a spiritual emotion of the soul, and it's the natural emotion of the soul, devotional service. One more set, 16 and 17. As Krishna, now these verses, this set of verses is Krishna no longer in the company of Mother Yasoda. So when she's in, when they're in the company of Mother Yasoda, they talked about the demigods and her, and Krishna's flute playing was so captivating that even the demigods were moved and stunned by it. But now they'll change. So before that it was the unmoving entities, before that it was the non-conscious entities on earth, and before and after that it was the non-conscious entities in the sky. And now then it was in the presence of Mother Yasoda, and now it's something different. As Krishna strolls through Braja with his lotus petal-like feet. So what are the qualities of lotus petal-like feet? Soft.
Delicate.
Yes, delicate. Pinkish. Yeah. Soft, delicate, and pinkish. As Krishna strolls through Braja with his lotus petal-like feet, marking the ground with the distinct emblems of flag, thunderbolt, lotus, and elephant god, he relieves the distress the ground feels from the cow's hoofs. As he plays his renowned flute, his body moves with the grace of an elephant. Thus we gopis, who become agitated by Cupid when Krishna playfully glances at us, stand as still as trees, unaware that our hair and garments are slackening. Here Mother Yasoda is no longer in the company of the gopis who are confidentially describing the conjugal attraction to Sri Krishna. It is clear from the comments of Sri Jiva Goswami and the other acharyas that the statements in this chapter were made at various times and places. This is natural since the gopis were always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna day and night. The gopis said, the soft touch of Krishna's lotus petal feet, marked with a conch flag and god. God means the, what is it called? Ankush. Pacifies Mother Earth from the pain she feels from the hoofs of the cows returning to Braja in the late afternoon. As Krishna walks by with the gait of a maddened elephant, he agitates our heart by his playful glances, and thus we become stunned and immobilized, just like trees. In our bewilderment, we failed to notice that the garlands around our hair are slipping off. On one hand, Krishna removes the distress of the earth, but for us Braja gopis, he agitates our minds by glancing at us with his beautiful lotus eyes. Such is our misfortune. So they see a great contradiction in this, that Krishna removes the distress of the earth, but he gives them complete distress when he looks at them. But of course it's not real distress. So is he a remover of distress or a giver of distress? What do you think? Distresses, their symptoms up there. Any questions or comments about this? You can see what Prabhupada. Let's said about these sections in the Krishna book. This is Prabhupada's writings in 1970. So this is the talks to Mother Yasoda, in Mother Yasoda's presence. One of the gopis told Mother Yasoda, "My dear mother, your son is very expert among the cowherd boys. He knows all the different arts of how to tend the cows and how to play the flute. He composes his own songs, and to play them he puts his flute to his mouth. When he plays, either in the morning or in the evening, all the demigods, including Lord Shiva, Brahma, Indra, and Chandra, bow their heads and listen with great attention. Although they are very learned and expert, they cannot understand the musical arrangement of Krishna's flute. They simply listen attentively and try to understand, but they become bewildered and nothing more." Another gopi said, "My dear friends," so this is what we just read, "when Krishna returns home with his cows, the footprints of the soles of his feet with the flag, thunderbolt, trident, and lotus flower relieve the pain the earth feels when the cows traverse it. He walks in a stride which is so attractive." So Prabhupada has taken out the part of a maddened elephant, because he's talking to the people who, the only time they've ever seen elephants was when they went to the zoo. They're trapped there. But elephants, how does an elephant walk that reminds one of, or Krishna walk that reminds one of an elephant?
Different gates. Elephant, lion. They have different sort of
walk. Yeah, well, how is an elephant, what's the specific walking of an elephant? Yeah, he sways back and forth as he walks. He walks this way, and Krishna does that. And also they walk with very deliberate steps. Very, very, as we would say nowadays, cool. Very, very deliberate, slow steps like that, like he has no anxiety, no pressure, just walking and swaying back and forth as he walks, and marking the ground with his lotus footprints. And that being touched by Krishna, the earth, the distress of the earth is removed. But then when Krishna looks at the gopis with his lotus-like eyes, their distress, seeming distress, bursts into flames. He walks in a stride which is so attractive, so swaying back and forth in a slow and deliberate way. And he carries his flute, and just by looking at him, we desire to enjoy his company. At that time, so what's the effect of the desires that they have? At that time, looking at Krishna, what's going on in their consciousness, in their hearts, reflects in their body, and they become stunned. Our movements cease. We become just like trees. They can't move. And they stand perfectly still, unaware that our hair and clothes are loosening. So that becoming stunned that happens to the birds when they hear the sound of Krishna's flute. It happens to the gopis. It happens to those things that move become stunned. Those things that don't move start moving and melting, like the rocks, like the trees, their movements take the form of the offerings of their fruits, the flowing of the honey and the sap. So everything's natural characteristics become reversed by the effect of the consciousness touching Krishna's flute, the sound vibration of Krishna's flute. So quite astounding. How to describe something that's incomprehensible from a different realm? How do you describe and make people from this realm understand something of that realm? Which even as we were saying yesterday, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said previously, I compared your, maybe it was 2 days ago, your complexion to a rain cloud. But now I see that was just completely hollow. It was like words, because it's something completely different. You're not like a rain cloud of this world at all. Your dhoti is, the color of your dhoti is not like lightning of this world. It's something from a different land, from a different dimension, from a different realm, the spiritual realm. So how do you describe to someone from this realm the charmingness and overwhelming sweetness of that realm? So that's the job of the poets, the transcendental poets, like Srila Sukadeva Goswami, like Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So they do it very much by analogy. We become like trees by watching the effect of Krishna's presence on others. We can get an idea of how amazing and powerful and overwhelming Krishna's presence is. Krishna's fragrance is overwhelming. Krishna, the sound of his flute is overwhelming. The beauty of his face, the captivatingness and attractiveness of his smile is overwhelming. His eyes, his movement of his eyebrows, his hair, the way he dresses, the way he walks, his footprints. When Akura saw his footprints, he rolled on the ground in ecstasy. The way he dresses, the way he wears his dhoti, the way he wears his turban, the way he has flower garlands on his, in his hair. Where else were they? In his hair, on his chest. And so much overwhelming that when clouds see him, they give up their normal neutrality and they see him as their dear friend. They reciprocate with him. Prabhupada's been here, he's going to, it's something that Krishna willing will read tomorrow. He says something, this I'll just read two sentences. Such descriptions of Krishna's transcendental pastimes and activities were remembered by the gopis during his absence from Vrindavan. They give us some idea of how attractive Krishna is, not only to human beings, but to all animate and inanimate objects. So they give us some idea of this all-attractive Supreme Person whose names we are chanting and who we're trying to develop a desire to go to the spiritual world and be with him. They give us some idea of how attractive. So if the little bit of an idea is attractive, just imagine how attractive he is. Because of my covered consciousness, say Krishna's a million times of attractive numerals, or he gets a million attractive points. And what do I get? What am I able to perceive of that million? Just, a tiny, not even a drop, half of a drop or something. Still, it's It's impelling like anything. So what to speak of what the advanced souls experience, what to speak of what the, when the gopis hear the sound of Krishna's flute, they go running to him wherever they are, whatever they're doing, nothing can hold them back. They're just overwhelmed with attraction. They're completely, yeah, overwhelmed with attraction. The cowherd boy is overwhelmed with attraction. Mother Yasoda, Nanda Maharaj is overwhelmed with attraction. The cows overwhelmed with attraction. The trees, the grass, the creepers, the river, the clouds, the birds of Vrindavan, the deers, the bees, all overwhelmed with attraction for Krishna. And that's why he's called all attractive. Okay. So let us somehow or another develop an attraction for Krishna.
Quite interesting that the gopis who are in separation from Krishna, primarily in consciousness, one of the things they're drawn to do to achieve that is to go and seek the cessation of the soda.
Yeah.
Talk with you about in a different
mood.
You know, quite interesting, isn't it?
But every day, the gopis would go and see Mother Yasoda. When Krishna wasn't, after Krishna leaves, they would go every day and try to console her. They felt so sad.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, and they said to Krishna, "Krishna, we can understand that you've gone to Mathura. And now you don't need us anymore. Because you have other girlfriends." This was their mood.
Mm-hmm.
"But how could you do this to Mother Yasoda?" This is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. "Don't you think about your mother, father, how they're pining from you? What's happened to them? Mother Yasoda, Mother Yasoda didn't eat, didn't do anything. When Krishna left, after Krishna left, she couldn't eat, she couldn't even talk."
Yeah.
"She didn't clean the house, cook, stunned and crying."
Interesting. You know, the mellow is different, because he's able to acknowledge the greatness of the love and seek in that association.
And as you're saying, they can only speak about certain aspects of their relationship with Krishna.
Yeah.
Because love seeks love, yes?
Yeah.
But only when the love is exactly of the same flavor can you reveal everything. And that's one of the reasons why Krishna left the gopis during the rasa dance, because all the gopis, regardless of the different groups they were in, all became overwhelmed by separation from Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore the distinctions between their different mentalities were washed aside by the power of their separation. So therefore they became one in a mood. In mood, so therefore they could, therefore the rasa dance could go on in a simple, in a way that could work. Did you want to?
When Mahaprabhu left, took something else. 12 days, Sati Mahaprabhu.
Yeah.
Didn't eat, didn't drink. She was stunned. And Vrindavan Das Thakur says that the father of Mahaprabhu is taking care of her. She didn't start as an Upasaka.
And when the sun came up on that day, all the devotees came, because they used to come in the morning, and they came and they saw Mother Sachi outside of the house completely broken.
She's just standing and sitting at the door, you know, like a statue.
And she said to them, "He's gone. Now everything, it's your property too. You can take what you want. He's gone. It's now public property." There's one lecture that I've heard where Prabhupada, he's telling a story, and Mahaprabhu, he's talking about Mahaprabhu leaving to take sannyas, and then he starts talking about Mother Sachi, and then he has to stop. He can't, his emotions become too high. It's Karuna Ras to the highest degree.
We do not get that emotion either in kirtan or hearing, then it is said. Tulsi, it's a Ramayana. Tulsi, pichle paap se hari charcha na suhaye, jaise jwar ke ansh se bhook fida ho jaye. It means, Tulsi is saying, because of our past sins, we do not like hari katha. Kirtan and don't have that sort of emotions. As somebody who had fever, his hunger is finished, appetite is finished. That's the situation. And Krishna himself says, Yesham Svanta Gatam Papam Jananam Punya Karma Te Dvandava Mohne Mukta Bhajante Maam Dhridhuta. If we do not get any taste in chanting, doing our japa, the reason is this, that we, our parts, our sins are still there, you know, they haven't been washed away.
Do daivam. Indirisamiha nanujana laga.
The
daivam means unfortunate if I am.
So, the simple thing is that we have anarthas in our hearts. How to wash them away.
So right after that verse, the next verse is the step that comes before washing them away, which is Trinada Pisunicena. We have to see our unfortunateness and our lowliness, and then we can chant in a way.
How do you feel that?
But being conscious of what you just said.
It's a level of consciousness already achieved by knowledge, by kripa, by somebody.
By hearing, though.
Yeah, even that. Guru kripa, Prabhu kripa, all those things. You can't rush it, you know, by force. Evolution.
We're Australians, we're not Russians.
Russians.
Russian here and there. Hare Krishna. What to do? What to do? Try to serve those who are exalted.